cliffcentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It is Monday. Good morning. I am joined this morning by none other than Leanne Moll and Michael Flax. Yes, Flax is back for his first show of the year. It's nice to see you, Flaxy. How are you doing?
Morning. Happy New Year. Yeah. People are still saying that this time of year. I don't know when it stopped.
I think we called a hard stop on, I think, the 10th. We think the 10th is about the right time to call it off. So, yeah, so
happy Monday, everyone. Yeah.
Just better. Back to the normal grind.
Right, exactly.
The image of load shedding right there. That's front cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, he's back a little bit. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
No.
Can you not hear me?
Yeah, I can. We can hear you now.
So, morning, Ass. How are you?
All good, thanks. You probably won't be able to see so well, but my eyes are a little red this morning.
Why? What happened?
And that's because
get into a fight with a homeless guy, and he sprayed you with mace.
Yes, and then straight after that, I went to bed, couldn't have the fan on because of load shedding, so the mozzies were out. One of those anti-mozzie candles, and yeah, it's not good to inhale that stuff all night and have it near your face.
The citronella one?
No, the poison one.
Poison?
Yeah, I don't want to say brand names, but it's like the stuff that you spray on your body.
Oh, my God. Okay, so you just kept that thing
burning. That in candle form.
So, I mean, you have to make a call, right? You have to go, okay, either I'm not going to be able to sleep properly and the mozzies are going to eat me, or I've got to have the poison candle. So
the poison candle.
So you chose the poison candle.
Yeah, I've been blowing my nose and coughing and spluttering and red eyes.
Horrible.
Anyway, the choices we have to make, you know?
Yeah, these are the tough things that you got to do on a daily basis. So, Flax.
Can I throw in an option three?
What is option three?
So, what I got is a fan that takes two batteries. As soon as the power goes off, the fan keeps going on these two batteries. It's called a portable fan, or it's like a fan for camping.
Okay.
And I think it lasts about 6 to 9 hours on low speed. And it is the greatest purchase ever. It's not even like a lot more than a normal fan.
And are those like batteries that you have to throw away afterwards, or are they rechargeable ones?
No, proper like rechargeable square batteries.
All right.
Yeah, works extremely well.
Well, that sounds like a plan. There we go. See?
Yeah, learn something from Flax.
You don't have to do the poison. You don't have to poison yourself every night, Leanne.
See? With the poison candle.
Poison candle. All right. Well, Flax, am I right that you just got back from your holiday?
Yeah, I went to. Have you guys ever been to St. Lucia?
I haven't, but I've heard wonderful things about it.
Yeah, heard.
Tell us.
I think it's one of the most interesting towns. It's very much a fisherman's town. Mm-hmm. That is the culture there. Very small town. But what's very interesting about it is that there's these hippos that roam the streets.
What?
But like when I say roam the streets, you can leave your gate and they probably like 15 to 20 meters grazing from you in a park somewhere. And at night, everyone like gets in their cars with their kids, etc. And you start driving the streets to try find where the hippos are grazing, and you just watch them graze from afar, and it's so interesting and it's so beautiful there because you have Cape Vidal, your beaches are beautiful. On the right hand side you have the ocean and fishing, etc., but then on the left hand side you have the wetlands, the I think it's called the Isimanga Park, and you have your wildlife there, you have your hippos, your crocodiles. So it's sort of like you're in the middle of the best of both worlds on either side.
How long were you there for?
I was there for about 4 or 5 nights.
Okay, I mean, it's not the kind of place that would be on most people's tourist radar. Were you trying especially to get away from like the normal holiday places, or was it somewhere you were really interested in going, or like what was the reason you chose St. Lucia?
I was trying to get away from every possible box there was.
Yeah, look, I mean, it sounds brilliant, except that hippos can be bloody terrifying. You know, I mean, they really are very, very dangerous, especially at night. And if there's so many of them just roaming around doing what they want, you've got to really, you've got to be paying attention. You can't just,
Not like hundreds and thousands of them, maybe like four you'll spot on like a drive, and they're grazing in the parks where like people would play during the day.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Crazy.
No, no. It's like four.
Everyone's accustomed to that. Is the thing there.
Four is a lot. And hippos, you do not miss.
Yeah, it only takes one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. All right, well, I really don't think it would be on my... You know, I was talking to family over the weekend about this. My whole family, with the exception of my sister maybe, they're all like nature reserve crazy. They love that stuff. They love going to the Kruger Park. They love, they love doing those game drives. They love all that stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of these people who hates them. I don't dislike going to the park, but it's not my, let's just put it this way. I can do a couple of game drives and then I've had enough. I don't need to spend a week in the game reserve. I think I'd go dilly. I mean, the last time I went was in November of 2019, I think. Or no, 2020. And I went to that private game reserve called Singita, which is beautiful.
Oh, my word.
No, Leanne, it's
the cream of the crop.
Yeah, it really is. And in 2 days and two nights, I got to see pretty much everything because they have lots of leopard there. They know all the leopards' names. It's really amazing. You can't. There's nothing that you know. If you want to see stuff, you will see it there. And 2 days and two nights was enough. I mean, especially because you're in the lap of luxury with a place like that. And I always think, you know, that's why I asked you, Flax, how many days and nights you spent in a place like St. Lucia. Because even if you're in like a Cape Town or a wherever, I can't do these long trips that everybody else seems to need. You know, these 10 days in a place or whatever. I'll go crazy. I get very frustrated and bored. And I was talking to, I think it was my dad. He loves trains. Now, he wants to get on one of these luxury trains and take it from, I don't know, somewhere in the far north of Namibia or something to Cape Town or whatever with my mom. And she's like really not keen. She's like to be trapped on a train. And I know it sounds silly, but to be trapped on a train for like 9 or 10 days, I just wouldn't. I can understand why she wouldn't want to do it, but I wouldn't want to do that, even if it is pure luxury. 10 days in one place? Uh-uh. I feel very trapped.
In a tiny cabin, you probably have one other place to go, and that's the dining room, and then back to your cabin.
Yeah.
I'm sure the views are spectacular, but I could not do that.
Well, I mean, apparently they stop in a whole bunch of different places, and you know, you spend one or two nights in these really lovely... And listen, Namibia looks absolutely spectacularly beautiful. But again, I don't get these people. Also, these people who are on holiday for like a month and a half of the year. I'm like, come on, guys. You know, there's a point where... And I know I sound like a bitter person who's back at work, but there's a point where you're like, okay, enough of the holidays. You know, I see these people who are only... They've gone on holiday now. They're arriving in some... You know, tropical destination now. And I'm like, I know that they weren't working through December either. So they've got a lot of holiday. And maybe a part of me is just jealous and I want to know how they do that. But I got to get back to work at some point. Do something productive, you know? Feel like you're busy. Feel like you're needed. Feel like if you're not there that someone will miss you kind of thing. You got to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the logic behind going on holiday like middle of Jan or February, whereby you know December will be quiet and it will be easy at work.
Right.
And then you go later on and you miss the entire rush. Prices are slashed in half. You save a bunch of money. And you come back and sort of everyone's got into the groove. You're not sending emails and getting responses back saying, I'm only back on the 16th, etc. It's like... I wouldn't mind trying it 1 year.
Listen, I mean, it's also nice if you can do it because it means that either you've got, you know, a sort of job where you can take off a lot of time because other people can fill in the gaps for you, or you have tons and tons of money and you don't really need to worry about being back at work. I mean, that would also be a good explanation, right?
I never take off that week between Christmas and New Year. I always elect to work then, because like you say, Michael, it's like so quiet and easy. Everyone gets back and they're sad and you're off to your holiday.
Yeah.
See, the big companies understand this and they do compulsory leave for everyone during those days.
Yeah. That's a clever way of getting around it. All right. Yeah. So apparently, and it doesn't take long for the people in the comments to figure out what's going on, that already, and I just love this, people know that there's a tiger on the loose in Walkerville, which is the south of Joburg. There's a fucking tiger running around.
It's obviously someone's pet.
Yeah, so, well, the story is, because this is from ENCA this morning, you know, just when you think Joburg isn't dangerous enough, an escaped tiger from a property in Walkerville is understood to have been released when the fences were cut on Saturday night. It was then reported to have been sighted near the Daleside Vet and had attacked one person and killed a dog. Citizens are urged to be on high alert, not approach the tiger as it is aggressive and will attack without provocation.
Imagine that poor dog.
I know. Do people have to...
That's the biggest cat in the world I've ever seen.
Yeah, it couldn't have been a great story, but there are a few things here. First of all, don't keep wild, dangerous animals as pets, right? Can we all just agree that we won't do that? Because everybody thinks it's so cool and... like I'm Mike Tyson, I got my own tiger. There's something wrong with people who keep animals like this in their own garden as a pet. Second thing is, the fence was cut, which means that there's probably some criminal who was cutting fences to try and steal shit. I hope the tiger at least did them some damage. That would be good. Because, again, I don't want to, you know.
Maybe it was a tree hugger trying to free the animal.
Well, I have no sympathy for... You know, when people who are doing a bad thing and then something even worse happens to them, I'm okay with that. I'm like, you know, that's a bit of karma, instant karma. Propaganda, you just say bad kitty, sit and feed it a roast chicken, says Ginger Winger. Oof, don't know. Don't know about that. I don't think that's going to work. Now, while we're talking about these things, have you also heard that, like, a lot of people with these, you know, these constant power interruptions now, that is apparently when the cable thieves do their stuff. Because because they work for the city council or they've got inside knowledge. I mean, not that you'd need inside knowledge, but to find these cables, you would need inside knowledge. Because you're not just going to dig around randomly until you find something, right? You have to actually know what you're looking for.
Yeah. Are the cables like in suburban areas, or are we talking about like weird places?
No, they go under the roads, under the ground, next to the suburban streets or whatever, to these power boxes which you see all over the place. And the guys who know where they are and who know what the load shedding schedule is, they strike apparently during load shedding. And it's happened here in my neighborhood, I think, twice already. So it means that it's people who are in the know. Again, surely a little bit of investigative capacity in our police would be able to find these people fairly quickly and deal with the problem. Or am I asking too much?
I mean, the security companies have been pretty good at picking these guys out and having them arrested. But a lot of them just do it quite brazenly in the open. They put on any old overalls. They put up tape. Plastic tape, so it looks like they're official.
Yeah.
And there'll be like five of them just digging out cables. Yeah. And no one stops to think, hey, those aren't, you know, municipality workers.
I've got that happening around the corner. To me, it looks legit. I waved at them.
You don't know. It's probably a bunch of criminals.
And it takes a long time to get to these cables. Some of them are like 3 meters underground, older ones.
Yes.
The more valuable ones.
Is it copper? Is that what they're after?
Yeah, they're after copper because the value of like scrap copper is worth taking the chance of A, being electrocuted, and B, digging down 2-3 meters to, I don't think it's like that deep everywhere, but, you know, worth it to kind of steal the stuff.
I know that because remember the Christmas story with my Jewish friend who had to cook the Christmas turkey?
Yes.
When our power was out. And that's because those pipes, which were laid in the 1930s, those were 3 meters underground. So, yeah, the newer ones are further up. But they're still, I mean, it takes some time.
They used to really do it properly, hey? 1930s, digging 3 meters down. Yeah. Shit. So Lindy says, sorry, Flax, just to my point earlier of people who have these long holidays, I met an old English man in Mauritius who said he'd been at the resort from the beginning of December and would be leaving at the end of Feb. Jeez. It sounds great, but I reckon easily after the first 8 to 10 days, you are bored. I mean, this guy, either he's there, I mean, he's got to be there with his wife or girlfriend, right? To be in a resort for that long? Mm-mm.
The thing is, if you can keep yourself busy, like, you know, carry on with work on your laptop and set aside days to maybe travel to another island. Mauritius isn't really like that. Mm. But, yeah, I would not complain. I would not be upset if you told me that's what I had to do.
Wouldn't be crying on the island.
No.
I don't think I'd be so happy. And I think you guys are just like, you're going, oh, well, it would be nice to be doing nothing and to be in the pool. And I can't see that happening for 3 months. I'm sorry. Beginning of December, whole of January, and all of February, according to Lindy. So that's a long, long-ass time.
Are you talking about one place? Like, Gareth, if there were like 3 places or 4 places, you'd do it.
No, she says this is one resort where this guy is for 3 months. Nuh-uh.
Yeah, I can do one resort for 3 months. Start working at the resort.
That's like being trapped. I mean,
start clearing the plates, washing some dishes.
Jeez. And here I am telling you, like, 10 days is the longest holiday I've ever taken in my life. I've never been away for more than 10 days at a time, ever.
Mm.
So I'd go dilly. All right, but let's leave that behind. So Leanne has got something really fascinating for us this morning, and I didn't even know this is true. First of all, it freaks me out a little bit, but apparently your feet keep growing with age. Is that true?
Do you know of anyone who has said, can't understand it, but my feet are getting bigger and bigger?
This very weekend it happened.
It happened to you?
To you.
Well, no, not to me. A pregnant woman said your feet grow when you're pregnant.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Can you confirm that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all in this.
But not swelling.
It's all in this research document. Well, usually when you get a bit older, excuse me, I'm still battling from the poison candle.
Clearly, you're getting get that poison out, Leanne. Just you know, get it out.
My eyes are watering. You'll see when you get older. It often happens where you wake up and your shoes feel a little bit snug.
All right.
But it does actually happen, and it's got a lot to do with number one, just age. You know, you've got that arch under your foot.
Yes.
And over time, that just starts to break down a bit. Like if you know, the ligaments and the tendons, they start to flatten out a bit. So that'll make your foot increase in length and width. So it sounds like a freaky phenomenon, but it's not. It is all explained.
Yeah.
Just basically from overuse. The big thing, of course, is pregnancy and hormonal changes. It's not just the weight that you're carrying when you're pregnant. That obviously enhances it as well. But it's actually a hormone. Your body produces a hormone called relaxin, fittingly, because it relaxes and enhances your ligaments' elasticity. So that's all, you know, purpose to prepare your pelvis and your cervix for birth. But it obviously affects other body parts like your feet. And as those ligaments relax, your arches droop and then flatten. And your tooties get a little bit wider and longer. There's also another hormone that's produced to allow the baby's passage through the birth canal, oxytocin, that also weakens the ligaments and flattens out your feet.
Okay.
And then there is the swelling as well on top of that and the increased weight gain. So, yeah, I mean, if you just think of what happens to a pregnant woman's feet during gestation, you can imagine what's happening with the rest of her body. But then as well, there's some other underlying medical conditions, whether you're pregnant or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have arthritis, those can damage the lining of the joints, so your feet again flatten and spread out. And these can all be avoided by firstly not falling pregnant. Secondly, you can do specific stretches for your feet and foot health, and stretching your Achilles, etc. Maintaining a healthy weight and wearing proper fitting shoes, and also making sure that you swap out those old running shoes that you've flattened out for new ones every now and then.
Oy, oy, oy. It's so gross and like horrible to me to think that your feet keep growing and ugh. I mean, like, I've been wearing a size 10 shoe for all of my life. I don't feel like suddenly it's harder for me to get my shoes on. Is this a very,
probably
very
later in, it's going to be later in your life, I'm
oh
sure.
No, as if
you've got that to look forward
as
to.
As if getting old isn't horrible enough, now you also have to budget for extra big shoes. Ugh, how disgusting.
And remember your ears and nose will continue to grow as well.
Oh no.
Really?
Particularly in men. Yeah.
Oh no,
they never stop growing.
Wouldn't it be better if like our penises and our, what else would, what would you want to grow? Like, what other things would be better if they grew?
Like your chest muscles or something.
Right. Yeah. Instead, it's our fucking feet and nose and ears. Sis. Yeah, you start looking.
No, like, if you're, it would be most helpful, you're right, Flax, if your arms grew. Because then
you got taller.
When you're older, you can just reach into the kitchen.
You can be like the expandables.
Yeah, Carl says he thinks it's bullshit. He says it's not true. Your shoe size would change.
Your shoe size does change, Carl.
Yeah.
You literally have to buy a bigger size shoe.
Propaganda says it's just bunions.
Yeah, I've got those as well.
Senator says, please, can we not talk about bunions? Not today, not this morning, not this year.
I agree. I agree completely.
And Leto Klolo says, so you're telling me that Bigfoot's just a very, very old man?
He is the size of elephants.
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad. Anyway. All right. So don't worry, Gareth. You'll be wearing Crocs, so a few millimeters growth won't even matter. Go to hell, David. I will never, ever own a pair of Crocs. Mark my words.
Can we just chat about Crocs? Because I feel like everyone says this till they try it on.
Uh-oh.
And you realize these are the most comfortable shoes that have a usage in every single situation, including gardening.
Please tell me you don't.
The design.
You've got Crocs.
I have the coolest Crocs you will ever see.
They're all back in fashion again, Gareth. The youngsters are.
Sorry.
Enjoying them and getting them as Christmas gifts, and they're getting all the little plug-in jewels, all of that type of stuff.
No, man.
They're so comfortable.
Sorry.
But they say don't ever just put one on your foot because you'll buy them.
No, yeah, not going to happen.
True.
Nope. Not going to happen. The day I get Crocs, just come right over to my house and just shoot me. Shoot me dead. It's just over. I do not want to know about that. Kampamba says, listen to me. He says, those fucking Crocs are so comfortable.
Killing you.
You have no idea.
There's, I've seen a few videos of like really trendy early 20-year-olds who like are really like great dressers.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them making videos of themselves in their cars looking really depressed because they tried on a pair of Crocs and now they were ending up wearing them to the shops.
No. So even George is on my side at least. He says, I've tried Crocs and they're very comfy, but they're fugly as hell. So true, Flax, says Therence. Don't mock it if you haven't tried it. Yeah, people, you see, this is now we see the true character of people coming through. Bleeding through. Dr. Robin, my daughter did explain that I'm too old for Crocs. Only the cool kids wear them.
You see, I
don't care. Sorry. It's just not acceptable. Once you've crossed that line, it's a downhill to being put in a home.
This was probably the first year in my lifetime that Clifton had numerous pairs of Crocs roaming the sand over there.
Listen.
They are.
I don't care which cool people are wearing them. You know, I'm not one for trends. I've never been impressed by, if those people over there wear them, then they must be cool. Doesn't change a thing to me still. I look at them with those holes on the top and I think, not on.
When your feet are gliding and those holes catch some breeze, oh my God, it's like.
Yeah, Gareth, I'd like to see you doing 12-hour shifts as a nurse in the hospital.
No.
I'm sure after week one, you're going to be like,
Even worry about the Crocs. I'll imagine those poor patients if I'm their nurse. Come on. Let's be reasonable about this. Like, I'd be any good at any of that stuff. So somebody here says, Tiger DC says, Gareth, I picture you in a bright yellow pair of Crocs. And not going to happen. Not a chance. A lot of people warning if you even try them, you're going to be hooked, which is what Flex was saying just now. I can't imagine anything about a shoe being so wonderful that you have to buy them just because they're comfortable. I think shoes have to look nice and be comfortable. I mean, I say that as a sneaker collector, you know, someone who loves sneakers. And I haven't bought new ones for a long while, but I need to. And I'm excited about the idea, even though it's such an expensive thing. Because these days, you're not going to get a good pair of sneakers for under $1,500. And I'm being cheap because they're a lot more than that.
See, what Crocs do is you think they're ugly, etc. And then you go try them on. And in that split second, you say to yourself, like, life's too short. You know, we just got to enjoy ourselves and be comfortable. And then you end up purchasing them.
What do they cost? I don't even know what they cost.
About 600-700 rand.
Oh, okay. So they're cheap as well. I mean, cheap by comparison with like sneakers.
These things can take a hailstorm to them, like anything. And they walk over everything. You could probably walk over water with them.
So maybe that was Jesus' secret.
He wore Crocs.
I would rather take a pair of like Havaianas. That's my idea of, you know.
They were out again this weekend. All the men, I knew that there must have been sport on. All the men at Spa with their little flip-flops and shorts. Clippy, 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 clippy. All excited with their baskets full of beer. And then one was wearing a football shirt and one of the you know, Premier League shirts. And total strangers come up to each other. What's the score?
Oh, wow.
Oh no, we won. I'm like, who's we? You're a little man in Spa somewhere in Johannesburg.
We won.
And you're saying that we won. All excited. I'm just like, I don't understand.
Well, neither do I. I've never understood that stuff, so don't even begin. However, I was wearing my Argentina shirt last week. I didn't talk about we, though. You know, I'm aware of how little I contributed to their success. So Hay says he saw.
Oh, Ryan says it was the Manchester Derby.
All right. Yeah. Well, then everybody gets like super excited, especially if you're British, especially if you talk like this. Hay says he saw me at a coffee shop on Saturday. I can't imagine him sitting there with Crocs. So my parents have a couple that they know that they've known for years. My mother actually has known this friend of hers for what? She said almost 50 years, and they're moving to Australia. So they had like a farewell, and you know, because we've all known them for most of our lives too, they said like pop in for a coffee or whatever. And so they invited a whole bunch of their friends to this coffee shop, which is quite cool. So there's all these old people sitting around this thing, and then I had to go and you know, do my duty as well. But it was really nice to see them.
Do you still call them auntie and uncle?
No, I've never done that with my parents' friends. But they, I mean, to be going that far, I mean, their kids live there, so I kind of understand it. But to be emigrating at any age over 50 is a big ask, hey? First of all, you know, as I said to my mom's friend there, a different friend. I said, you know, you've got to be careful. You think you can move anywhere, but after 50, you become undesirable to these countries. They don't want old people hanging around. Why would they want – you're not going to be as productive and useful to the country as you might have been when you were in your, you know, 20s, 30s, or 40s, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can still pay tax.
Well, yes. And on that note, somebody said to me that the best place for old people to move is apparently Costa Rica in Central America. Apparently Costa Rica is amazing. You can move there. Don't need a lot of money. You can be old, but you have to be earning – I don't know what it's some number between, I think it was about 15 to 20 grand a month, but you have to be on a pension, you have to have some investments, you have to be able to at least earn that kind of money. And then they'll welcome you in Costa Rica. They'll say, no, you can come. Mm-hmm. Apparently it's a good place for old people to go. So there we are. I learned something new at that coffee. I thought that was quite interesting.
Sure.
All right.
What happens to them not seeing their grandkids and things, though? That's a problem.
Well, no. These ones who are moving to Australia are not even thinking about Costa Rica. They're doing Australia for the grandkids and everything. But I don't know. I mean, if Costa Rica is really nice, maybe you invite the grandkids there. It's like a tropical place, you know. It's in the equatorial region. It's bound to be beautiful in the summer. I don't think it gets cold in places like that, which, again, old people hate the cold, right? So...
because of the arthritis.
Yes, the arthritis, the joints. So maybe Costa Rica is a good place to look at. I don't know. We've discussed this before, but if you could live anywhere, if you could retire anywhere, where would it be? Some people like cold places. Some people like hot places.
Hot.
You would want to be in a hot place.
A warm place in Europe.
Okay.
And not crowded, like where no one knows about. Like one of these towns that has
hippos.
What was that name? Walter Park, Walker Park.
Walker.
What was the one with the
Walkerville. No, Walkerville's in the south of Joburg. You don't want to be there. Especially not right now.
It's a farming community.
Yeah, especially not now with a tiger on the loose. Okay. Let's just stay away from Walkerville. So if you
Walker
see
it. Park.
By the way, if anybody sees a tiger in Walkerville, stay in your car, treat it like you're in the game reserve, all right? Please, don't get out. Don't try to pet the thing. All right, let's talk to some news headlines for the morning and see what's going on over there. So Basic Education Minister Angie Motshekga has defended the matric pass mark. So you know we've got the most appalling standards in this country. We have a 30% pass mark. It means you can get 7 out of 10 questions wrong.
Mm-mm.
7 out of every 10 questions you can get wrong and you could still pass in this stupid country. We're a really stupid country. I'm sorry, you can't call us...
like a literally stupid country.
You can't call us clever and you cannot call us smart or intelligent or well-informed or well-educated. We are very, very stupid. If the pass mark... in order for you to get a matric or, you know, any other kind of level through school, if 30% is the cutoff, we are really fucking stupid. Am I wrong?
Imagine a surgeon who knows only 30% of what he's doing.
You'll never go to a surgeon who knows that. You will never go to a surgeon. You'll never fly in a plane if the pilot has only passed 30% of the questions in the flying exam, right?
Yep.
Obviously, the pass rate's gone down, but was there ever a point in time where it was like high, like 60 or 70% you had to get?
Yes. Like when Gareth and I were at school.
Steve says, you don't need 30% in one subject. You need the 30% in three subjects. Ooh, well, that makes it harder. So basically, you just have to get 60% across three subjects and you're good. I mean, that's, you know, my parents would clap me if I got home from a test and said to them I got 60%. Honestly.
30% is not a pass. Like 50% I could understand, but 30% is not.
Well, here's the scary thing. So we've got a week to go before they release the matric results. I remember they used to sometimes release them while we were still on holiday, right? So it was
in December they released it.
Well, you would think so. So, I don't know what's going on there. Basic Education Minister Angie Motshekga has defended the pass requirement in South Africa, saying it's not anything new. This after Build One South Africa leader Musi Mamane took to social media early this week and criticized the 30% pass requirement. Mamane called for the matric certificates to be issued to those who pass six subjects with 50% or more. And I think that's fair. Six subjects with 50% or more, you can have a matric. I mean, a matric is pretty worthless now because we've made it so easy for people to get them. He said anything else was a deception. We must reject the notion. Yes?
If 30% is the pass rate, is that the university entrance rate as well?
Well, not sure. It depends what subjects, what course you're studying. There's some courses where you don't have to have very good marks. There's some where you do have to have very good marks. I mean, it's hugely competitive to get into university. Not as competitive as it is to get into, you know, the best universities in the world. But even here in South Africa, the universities are like, well, this is our threshold. And they, I think it differs from university to university as well.
If the government had to come forth and say we're raising the pass rate, it would create chaos. It's only good if they lower it. So which means we're just going to keep lowering
it. Yes, exactly.
Till it's zero.
It's a race to the bottom.
It's not good or, nor okay or going to get us anywhere.
So here's what they say in the story, because this is just, I don't know. I mean, we can sit here and moan about it. But speaking to the media this week during a walkabout in Cosmos City, Angie Motshekga defended the pass requirement. She said, even during my days, there was this thing that we called school leaving. So you pass at different levels. This is the basic education minister, all right? Universities won't take you if you have less than 50%. It's not new now that my money is searching for relevance. She's basically defending it. It's something that has always been in the system, even during my time.
She's defending it by saying it's not new. That's not a defense.
That's not a defense. No. I mean, the whole reason that we got rid of the old government once everyone in this country could vote and we brought in a new government was because we wanted the new government to be better. Right?
Mm.
Of course, they've turned out not to be. By all available stats, including most especially the one that has me sitting here in the dark at the moment and has all of us getting, if we're lucky, 4 or 5 hours of power a day, because now we're at stage six, right? So you don't even need a 30% pass. You don't need a 30% in matric to be able to know that this government is a total disaster.
Two
with stage eight on the cards, it'll be 12 to 14 hours of darkness a day, I believe.
Unbelievable.
Really matter because it's about half.
Unbelievable. But Flex, you kind of said it, like it's a race to the bottom, because if you're going to keep on trying to make people happy, you have to keep on dropping the pass rate. So just wait and see, because by the time the ANC have finished fucking up yet another thing, we'll be sitting looking at a 20 to 25% pass rate. Watch. It's going to happen. Sanele said they stopped that because woke culture said it's insensitive for matriculants to spend Christmas knowing that they failed. Pathetic. Oh, that's just the release of the results. Tommy says, I believe they dumbed down the university entrance requirements.
Maybe they shouldn't fail.
Too much value on university degrees. We need essential services, teachers and tradespeople. Yeah, but we don't want dumb ones there either. I mean, you shouldn't be dumb, full stop. You should learn as much as you can. If you're only learning 30% of the stuff we're trying to teach you at school, you're an idiot. Sorry.
Some essential services have been turned into university degrees. When I did my basic life support paramedic course, that was just a certificate. You would go do that in about 8 months. Mm-hmm. It's now, if you want to get a basic ambulance assistance, you have to go to university. It's now a full course, wow. Which I think is great.
Yeah, I remember the days, says Tracy, where you failed one of your languages, you failed the year. You also got matric exemptions and university exceptions. In my day, university entrance was at least 60%, says Peter. But most courses were 65%, usually known as university entrance. Yeah, look, when you expect very little from people, you're going to get very little from people. I'm afraid.
Mm.
Which brings us to one of my favorite things about Monday, and we missed him last week, and people were up in arms because they were like, how are we meant to start the year without our therapist on hand? And here he is. He's Dr. Hanan Bushkin, and he is live this morning from where he's about to start a very, very busy week with all of his new patients and his old ones and us, his every week Monday, 6:45 patients. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing really great. How are you doing, guys?
Good.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, if you're allowed to say it still. I think we declared that the 10th was the last day. But, Doc, you had a good holiday? You took a break?
Yeah, I had an epic holiday. I was overseas, went to the States, did a New York trip, Universal, was epic with the family. It was wonderful.
Very nice. All right, well, listen, I mean, we missed you last week, but we've got lots to talk about this week. Unstuck is something that we want to launch, and maybe you can start off just explaining, because you were at the office with us the other day. You popped in while we were having our meeting on Tuesday, and you said, "Hey guys," and we like stopped the meeting, and we started talking to you about what we want to do with this show going forward. And I think this is a really, really cool idea. So let's talk about this. It's a way for you to get live partner mediation. Now, it could be your girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife, could be a work colleague, it could be a friend, it could be a member of your family, but we all end up in situations where we need to resolve conflict. You know, I've just finished reading this Prince Harry's book. I mean, they could have really done with you. You could have helped there, because he has screwed up so royally, I mean, that pun, that if he'd only had Dr. Hanan to mediate the situation with him and his father and his brother and everybody else, this could have been resolved. It could have been sorted out tidily before it became a big issue. So, Doc, just explain where you came up with the idea.
So, in my practice, I see a lot of people coming with at least two problems. Mm. Number one is people don't know how to resolve a particular issue. They just don't have the skill set, the method, the system, the framework, the blueprint to overcome whatever challenges that are in front of them, and they come to therapy to learn to upskill themselves, to learn to fly the plane of their lives. And the second reason why I see people, the second most prominent issue that people come to therapy for, is because they have a massive disagreement with someone that they love and they care about something that they love and they care about. Mm-hmm. So whether it's their loved ones, whether it's a business partner, whether it's a child, whether it's a parent, mm-hmm. whether it's a mm-hmm. loss, that they actually disagree on a particular issue that is really consequential. So inconsequential decisions are easy to kind of make decisions on, because the results, whether you get it right or wrong, are inconsequential.
Right.
But when it comes to marriages, right. when it comes to your job, when it comes to your financial security, when it comes to your health, those decisions, especially when you're making it with someone else, you can't get it wrong. And therefore, the outcome is really consequential. And they come to therapy to have me as their so-called mediator, as a judge, to aid them in the right, or to guide them in the right direction. So the thought was, well, why don't we just do this on the show? Have couples, have partners, have parents, children, teachers, students, bosses, employees, two employees, two colleagues that disagree on a fundamental issue that they need a person to help them guide them in the right direction, because they just disagree on a particular method. So person A feels that they're 100% right in their direction. Mm-hmm. Person B feels that they're 100% right in their direction, but they just disagree on a particular way to do this together. And meeting halfway isn't working for them, and they need someone to guide them in the right direction. And that's the premise.
So, I mean, we all know of situations where we could have used some mediation. So you have to be a professional at this in order to help, because you have to try and be objective. You have to see both sides, and you have to guide people to the best possible outcome. So people pay lots of money to get someone professional to help them mediate a disagreement. And remember, a lot of people are going to listen to this going, I don't know if I want to put all this out there on, a public platform like this, and isn't it going to be embarrassing? We're going to take you very seriously. You can be anonymous. We don't need to reveal your name. You don't have to come on here with your face. And we will help you to figure out the best way through these things. Often you'll find yourself stuck, which is where the name Unstuck comes from. You'll find that you and whoever it is that you are having this conflict with, and remember, it doesn't have to be all-out war. It could be a disagreement about something small, like wearing Crocs, for heaven's sake. And if you want Dr. if you want Dr. Hanan to help figure out the small things or the big things, then send us an email. We're going to start that this week, and we really think it's a massive opportunity for people to stop getting stuck and to find a way out of really, really complicated situations. Because sometimes you're also too close to it, right, Doc? Sometimes you don't realize.
Yeah.
You lose the ability to be objective. You also have history with someone, maybe, and that all plays into it. Sometimes you're feeling sorry for yourself. Sometimes they are being unrealistic and unfair. Sometimes you're being unfair. You need someone to tell you that, and it has to be a third party who doesn't have an agenda.
Yeah, for sure. You know, people really marry their position. They emotionally marry their position and their strategy and how to get them from point A to point B, and they really, really marry that to the point that they're not willing to listen to the other person. They become emotionally married to their position. So sometimes they need an objective person that's looking at it from the outside to go, hold on, let me just give you perspective. Let's take three steps away from the situation and let's just see, are you making the right decision for the future version of yourself? So as a matter of fact, I started work last week. The most recent disagreement that I had to explore with a couple was the woman did not believe that the husband should go see or go to a strip club. The guy said, well, all my mates are doing it. It's really innocent. Why can't I be doing it? I'm not seeking anything further than that. I'm not going to go and get a private lap dance. I'm certainly not going to cheat. What's wrong with it? So she's marrying her position where, no, that's absolutely inappropriate. He's marrying his position, well, it's innocent. Well, if I can't be with my friends and do that, well, how do you expect me to stay socially in my community of friends? And they came into therapy to get mediation on what's the right outcome.
Right.
And one thing that I tell my couples is we're going to explore all options. We're going to be objective about it. And the truth is we're all going to give a little bit. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to leave this mediation feeling that they got everything. We're all going to give a little bit. And my decision is final. Do we agree? Yes, we agree. And that's how we explore it.
All right. Now, that's important because we're not going to just have this talk shop. We're not going to have people on and then you come out of it and you go, oh, well, you know, that was nice to know, but it hasn't actually moved us anywhere. We're going to, upon sending us this email, part of the whole process is that you're going to subject yourselves to Dr. Hanan's finding. He's going to be like a judge. He's going to say, in the case of Flax versus Mole, I find the following. Flax must do
Flax
blah, blah, blah.
Flax is not the father.
Exactly. So, but this is the stuff that we need because people these days, everything is so unclear, right? Everything's all like, let's talk about it. It's shades of gray. It's not black and white. Actually, people are desperate for a little bit of clarity, and this will help people get that clarity. So rather than wasting thousands of rands actually going to proper mediation with someone who's not as good as Dr. Hanan, come here, do it with us, and then you can solve your problem, move ahead, the relationship will benefit from it, and you're dealing with someone who actually knows what he's talking about. Right, Doc?
You know what, guys? One of my core principles that I live by and I teach is never sit on the fence. Sitting on the fence is disgusting. The brain hates uncertainty. But when we sit on the fence, nothing happens. So you're not getting accurate feedback to guide you in the right direction. So at the very least, never mind wasting a lot of money going to somebody maybe that isn't going to give you the right guidance. The worst possible outcome is not making any decision and living in a state of limbo anxiety. So come and let's explore this and let me lead you in the right direction. And the feedback will guide us into the next step and the next step. We will follow up with you, but you've got to make sure that when you come, you commit to the outcome. And once you commit to a position, you absolutely take it.
All right. Well, I like that. Go ahead, please.
That strip club topic is so fascinating because, like, there's so many different angles that play a role. Because one's like, is it morally correct? And one's like, is it a trust issue? It's like very hard to navigate that topic. Because both will feel like they're right, because the one's doing it innocently and nothing's going to happen there, but he's still putting himself in a position where there's more percentage chance that something could happen should he's get intoxicated or make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many factors you have to take into account.
So, you know, again, this is where, this is where experience comes into play as well. Like I find it difficult to think any other way because of my subjective experience. And that was my partner going. We used to go together, but as soon as he went alone,
you didn't like
he had that private dance and he went even further.
Hmm. Doc, you were going to say? You
know? Right. So I was going to say this is a difference between a really good therapist and a really wise therapist. Mm-hmm. A good therapist follows textbook. A wise therapist sees beyond that and sees the culture of the people, the background of the people, the hierarchy of values of the people. So the one right decision for couple one is the completely wrong decision for couple two. Mm-hmm. So couple one will give them one advice that guides them in one direction, and couple two, or partnership two, right, will give them a completely different advice based on where they're at. So we're going to take all of that into account. It won't be a superficial, frivolous, just eeny, meeny, miny, mo, go this way.
Yeah.
It will be a really well thought out decision that's right for the couple that's in front of us.
All right. So just before
decision, did that, just out of interest, what decision did that was right for that couple that you speak of?
So that for that couple, it was quite simple. She was willing to negotiate going with him, and he was okay with it. So when she went with him to the strip club, she felt that she was seeing and experiencing and enjoying and creating a memory and experience for the both of them. And he was feeling that he could still not be controlled, because his whole issue in this particular case is that he felt he was being controlled. He felt he was being stifled. He felt he was being handcuffed by his wife and told what to do. And as you know, human beings, when they're told what to do, we naturally want to rebel against that. So she felt that she was getting her way. He was getting his way, but still going, and that was the solution for them.
Love it.
Well, I mean, we're going to look at specific situations here. As I said, if you want to be anonymous, you're allowed to do that too. We're not trying to embarrass anybody. And if it's something silly or if it's something really, really important, and you're just stuck, you need help, this is the place to do it. And we're not going to charge you for it. So send us an email. It's going to be really easy to do this. contact@cliffcentral.com. And if you have an issue with someone that you need resolved, you want to join us live on the show for some free therapy, get in touch with us. We'll break it down. Dr. Hanan will give us the advice and we can move ahead. Unstuck. Isn't there a better feeling in the world than being unstuck? You're not trapped.
Very cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the opposite is also true. Being stuck is the worst.
It's horrible. I mean, you must have examples. Maybe that'll help, Doc, also for you to give us a couple more examples, because, you know, once you put it into the strip club example, you could see Flax and Leanna like trying to figure out what they might do, what they might say. In work situations, this happens all the time. And it's not always with a boss and a subordinate. It's sometimes with coworkers who are at the same level as you are in the job. And you have a personality clash about something. It could be something small like, you know, what you bring in for lunch. These things can lead to serious problems in offices.
Right. Putting snook so in the microwave.
Yeah.
Right. So the latest one that I had was actually, I do a lot of corporate mediation, and I had two employees and their colleagues that work in the same department in the same firm. Mm-hmm. And the one was taking way more leave, sick leave, then the other partner or the other colleague felt was just or fair. Mm-hmm. And they confronted each other and they couldn't actually come up with an agreement of whether it's appropriate to take so much sick leave, even if you're still able to come to work or not. And they created so much conflict in the workplace that the employer, the boss, actually sent them my way, and they were sitting here on the couch and we had to mediate and find a fair alternative. Remember, relationships work when the rules are clear and the rules are agreed on, and the rules are abided by. The moment the rules of the game isn't clear, the moment the rules of the games are not fair or just or agreed upon or abided by, there's going to be natural conflict. And what we're going to do on the show is we're going to create clear guidelines on managing relationships. So we don't just wing it, but rather we know exactly what is the person's one, the expectation of person one is, and we know exactly what the expectation of person two is, so they can lead and know exactly where the other one stands. Because games, which is part of relationships, are only played fairly when both partners know and agree on a particular way forward. And that's what we're going to create.
Well, it's also going to be useful for the rest of us who are listening to this, because we will be able to hopefully make sense of these things and improve our own outlook on, you know, behavior that we're perhaps going through the wrong way. We're not necessarily taking other people into consideration. There's a whole lot to talk about there too. So it's not as if it's just going to be advice for the people who are in a conflict situation. It's also going to be useful for the rest of us.
Yeah, and the fundamental value will be on how to communicate through a disagreement. Because once you learn the mechanism and the secret of communicating through any conflict, then you can deal with whatever's in front of you with whoever it is that you're dealing with. So the communication will be the key, and I will teach you how to do that.
Right. I love it. All right, Doc, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to a very, very exciting year with Dr. Hanan and Unstuck, among other things, right here on cliffcentral.com. Make sure that you send us those emails, contact@cliffcentral.com. It is 7 o'clock. We will be back with a whole lot more in just a little bit. Thanks, Doc. Cheers. See you later.
Thanks. Cliffcentral.com.